Welcome to We Are Libertarians Daily. I'm Sarah Brady Wagner, here with the guru of our research team, John Hody.
Hody Johns is the name, but thank you, Sarah.
Oh, see, I always get the two mixed up. I'm sorry.
You know, my last name is a common first name, and my first name sounds like it should be a last name, so you're not the only one on that one.
Well, we're glad to have you here. Well,
thank you. It's good to be here. Good to be here.
So today, Hody and I had just decided to sit down to discuss one of the topics that kind of gets us to a great granular cross-section of the law and of our different interpretations of morality and ethics, and one of the things libertarians love, which is markets.
Yeah, so you don't want to tune out on this episode. And I know for me, you first hear it, you hear, oh, in vitro fertilization, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to be a part of it. I don't know why I'd need to talk about it. Maybe I'll just skip this podcast. Absolutely do not. It impacts you somehow. We talk about issues all the time being used on a minority of people. They make laws and then they expand that to the majority. This is very classic in this case.
So one of the things that we want to talk about is the market involved in everything that goes into this. That there are different prices for all the different things involved. And Hody, you had looked up some of those prices and could tell us more about that?
Yeah. So as far as the market goes, one of the tough things when you study in vitro fertilization is it's got like 20 steps, and each of those steps is preceded by the word usually, which means there's a lot of opportunities for something unusual to happen during in vitro fertilization. So it's hard to imagine that everyone has a typical experience with it, or that there is a typical experience with it. When you look online, you say, well, how many eggs were removed? How many got fertilized? You'll get 6, you'll get 30, you'll get 40, you'll get 15. It's all over the map. It really depends on your doctor. It depends on where you went. As far as the exact cost goes, and I'm just getting this from WebMD, the average cost of an IVF cycle in the U.S. is approximately $12,400. That's per cycle. And that's one of the things that I kind of wanted to go into as far as what a cycle is, because to be honest with you, when I started this, I didn't know the difference between it, artificial insemination. What am I even looking at? So I had to get a lot of those medical definitions down, understand exactly what we were talking about.
So let's kind of back up to discuss exactly that. What is in vitro fertilization, and why would it be something that somebody would have to consider?
Sure. Super quick synopsis. Again, this is off of WebMD. A lot of usually words thrown in here, but let me give you the typical experience. The first step in IVF involves injecting hormones so that you produce multiple eggs each month instead of only one. You will then be tested to determine whether your egg...
Hody.
Yep.
We just backtrack. We haven't explained what it is. Like, we need to cover that this is something that you would do if you aren't able to have a child naturally, or if you are a same-sex couple. Like, we haven't actually covered that this fertility treatment.
Sure. So, I mean, as far as like subjects that would consider IVF, a lot of it is, let's see. I mean, the one that they say is the most common is a couple that is just having trouble maintaining a pregnancy. Obviously, I guess you need a mother still. You need a womb. So as far as same-sex couples, you got half of those same-sex couples that would look into a treatment like this. If you're having trouble carrying to term, it can involve someone else's sperm. So say if the father's sperm is completely non-viable, or even another egg. So yeah, I mean, now you had some experiences as far as when you looked into this, as far as like what was your experience with why you would look into IVF?
So IVF is a method of fertility treatment that couples who are unable to produce a natural pregnancy or child for whatever reason are able to go into. It's a way that medicine and science helps couples to be able to reproduce that wouldn't naturally be able to otherwise. Sometimes that means same-sex couples. In my case, that means a heterosexual couple who are missing one of the ingredients. For some couples, they have issues on the woman's side where they're either unable to carry a pregnancy or do not have viable or usable eggs. Sometimes the problem is on the man's side where they're not viable or usable sperm. Sometimes it's a combination of issues where you may have viable gametes, which is the sperm and the eggs, but you're not able to create a viable embryo. And we have this wonderful flourishing market that provides solutions to all of these missed ingredients. And it's a very interesting case because it's also a market that it functions differently than the rest of our medical markets in the United States, because it's largely one that's ignored by insurance.
Right. I mean, it's not going to save your life. It's trying to create a life, I guess, rather. So it's,
right.
Yeah. And it's very cutting edge. I mean, this is pretty new stuff, right?
It is. And it's interesting because the technology is always improving. And one thing that you had said there is that it's interesting that the prices always include usually, because there's no guarantees with fertility medicine. You are trying to eventually get a baby in the end, but there's so many different things that could happen anywhere along the route, and you might have to try a different method. And there's always it's at least what I discovered, is there's always a more advanced method available that is a little less reliable and a little more expensive.
Yeah, that is so true. And you'll get, the clinics can promise different success rates or failure rates. And a lot of times you're looking at, I've seen some clinics that are very expensive, but guarantee that like 40% rate, and some that are less successful, but a little bit cheaper. And you get like the 20% rates, and you're kind of somewhere in that range. And it's got to be hard for anybody going through it when you realize that even the good ones aren't a 50% chance per cycle, and the cost of that cycle is $12,400 every time. You've got to really want a kid here, right?
Yeah, well, and it's interesting when you compare it to the easy alternative that's often offered, which is adoption, which is another market that in comparison does have a guaranteed child, or I mean, I wouldn't say guaranteed, but even within that, you know, there's a lot of still ifs, but there is, at the end, there is already a living child. There's not just a chance that you will pay this much money and may still get nothing at the end. But it also comes with a lot more government regulation around it. And it ends up being easily twice the price of trying one round of IVF.
Wow.
I've always found that interesting that we make it more expensive to try to adopt children than we do to try and create new ones that you wouldn't have been able to normally.
And correct me if I'm wrong, because I haven't looked into the adoption thing. I am happily childless at the moment, but that could change. What happens? How does the market create itself where it's so expensive to adopt a child or to get an IVF? What's going on where we have extra embryos or we have extra children or something like that, and we just say there's too many of them, but it's really expensive to get a hold of them? That seems to be against what supply and demand would tell me.
Well, this is where it really gets into kind of the ethical part of it is folded in. Because the value that we put on different things, the value that we put on human life and what we consider a person is infinitely more significant than that which we put on a thing. And when we look at the legal context of this whole discussion, a child that can be adopted is a person and must be given a lot of legal and moral deference because of that. But when you're discussing eggs and sperm, which are gametes, or even fertilized embryos, these are all just considered property under the law. Okay. But they're also a special kind of property, which is one that is illegal to buy or sell. Like in the United States, you can't buy or sell. You cannot pay someone to donate their blood. You can compensate them for their time. And the same is true when it comes to sperm and egg donations. You can compensate men for their time when donating sperm. You can compensate women for the time they put in to go through egg retrieval. And that's where the market then is reflected very well in the difference in price that you can get to be compensated for your time. It takes a lot more time to go through egg retrieval than it does to go through a sperm donation.
Okay. So what you're touching on really heavily now is what I'm sure a lot of listeners right now are just saying, when does life begin? Oh my gosh, this is turning into when does life begin argument. And that is absolutely a huge part of IVF and a huge part of, I guess, controversy where people want the laws to go on this. This is kind of a frontier where there aren't a lot of laws on this right now yet, but there's going to be more unless the libertarians have their way with it, you know. So what are your thoughts? I guess I'll just say in general. I mean, just providing some numbers here, you know that we're going to retrieve some eggs. We're going to fertilize multiple eggs. We're going to have some fertilized eggs that we're not going to put back into the mother. And they usually put at least three into the mother and hope that one is viable. So we are talking about fertilized eggs that are being wasted, destroyed, perhaps frozen, but then frozen for how long? I mean, what are your thoughts on right to life, I guess, in this stage?
To me, this is learning more about kind of fertility markets and the way we go through this has really made that a more granular argument for me. And I don't really have any clear answers that I could give. But as you were saying, the process that it goes through makes you much more aware of that there is this gray area involved during gestation where there is a point which legally we put that point at viability, which is the point where a child could live on its own outside of a mother. And anything before that, you're still dealing with some sort of potential of being a full life, not necessarily being a full life, because once, you know, you have a scientific definition of alive, but what we're debating is personhood. It's when an individual life has to be taken into account and weighed morally. So, some people will go to the point of arguing that, you know, animal lives have to be held morally in equal amount to human lives. But when it comes down to the abortion debate, the question is, at what point does this become a person rather than just a human life? And if you say that that is at the point of conception, then IVF becomes a problem. Because in IVF, we, as you'd said, create more live embryos than in a lot of cases people ever have an intent to use. And that's something we do in order to achieve to increase the chances of success of having a live baby by the time you're done. You know, as you're saying, if you're a couple and you can go through and try and retrieve as many eggs as you can, and you may end up with five embryos at the end, you got lucky and the first two that you used both worked, you got two children. Now you've got three left over and you never had an intention of having five children.
Yeah.
And the question becomes, legally, what do we do with those embryos? And then morally, there's the other question of what should you do with those? There is, for in most cases, those embryos are either intentionally destroyed or they are left in long-term storage with kind of in a limbo where nobody ever intends to use them, but there's a strong emotional attachment that the biological parents or legally the owners have to them, understandably, because these are their children biologically, and with the potential that if they were to ever go through allowing that embryo to gestate, they may result in another live child. But is that necessarily the same as a child that's already been born?
Sure. Well, if you want to see people's feelings on it, you need look no further. We had two disasters this year in which a fertility clinic had frozen embryos. I think one of them, the thermometer failed or the alert system failed, and one of them, the cooling failed. And you saw the reaction from the people that had embryos destroyed. You saw how, I mean, and in fairness, I'd say the clinics were heartbroken as well. Both of them delivered a very horrified response to it. So there's certainly that. But to go back just a second here, it's one of those, so what I saw is when we talk about, you know, you talk about, you know, viability outside the womb, is that what creates a human life? There's a lot of feelings around it, and I think there has to be, because I don't know that you can scientifically prove when it's a life or when it's not. We all have our own definitions. We all have different feelings about it. I have had experience in my life before I knew what I want to do with life. I worked in a hospital and we had some abortions and I did some, you know, intubations and things like that. And I was around them, and I don't fault anyone who gets one. I would say I'm absolutely pro-choice. I don't like the government defining what someone can do with their bodies. That's a scary realm for me. I think it's also scary, and I understand pro-life libertarians to say letting the government define what is life and what is not and when they can pull the plug on you is also scary. I think there's a very liberty-minded argument to be had both ways. You know, so at some point, I felt ishy, and sometimes I feel okay. The morning after pill, I kind of feel okay, just personally. And I'm sure everyone feels differently about it, but I don't have like a moral sickness around it. Versus even sometimes before viability, it's, and I hate to be graphic, but I mean, it just is that sometimes they'll stick an egg beater up there and you'll see a couple of fingers and toes and just, it doesn't feel good, you know, for me. And I just didn't like it at a certain point. Is it always going to be up to the person or what's your feelings on it?
Well, I find it interesting that you mentioned the morning after pill, because I think that's very equivalent to what we were talking about here.
Oh, yeah.
The morning after pill, the way that it works is it does not prevent fertilization. So in that case, there is an embryo. So the embryo is inside the womb. What it does is it prevents implantation, which is exactly what is being prevented when you create embryos and keep them in storage rather than having them trying to implant. So, I mean, the logical consistency at least would say that if you hold that there, you know, I guess what I'm trying to say is it's interesting to have this discussion and to really think deeply about it to determine where you draw the line of where the gray area starts. Because for some people, it's not gray area before implantation. For some people, this whole conversation seems a little bit, you know, a little bit out there and strange that we would be discussing the moral implications of, you know, a clump of cells at the embryonic level. You know, it's only 5 days old. It's 16, 32
cells. But some people, I have no doubt, might not feel good about it, might not feel comfortable
exactly
saying, let's get rid of it, even though it's, I believe in IVF, they inject after 5 cells-ish from what I saw were started to happen, I guess.
Yeah, you can go with a few different ages, usually like 3 to 5 day embryos. But so let's actually talk a little bit about the economic market side of this. So
yeah.
We discussed before that it was it's a market that's largely unencumbered by the insurance industry, which in the United States does a large part for inflation and obscuring prices, which you don't necessarily see in the fertility markets. So what are the prices then of human eggs or human sperm, even though it's not something that you can directly purchase from an individual, but you could purchase it from a sperm bank or a clinic that does egg donations?
Whew. I mean, as far as like financially goes, the price of human life, again, is one of those very subjective things. There's some people that would, I certainly don't point to this, but that overpopulation is an issue, or that, you know, hey, if you can't have a kid, you can't have a kid and don't worry about it. It's you know, why are you letting your animal instincts drive you to say, I need to have a child? If you just aren't able to conceive normally, maybe you just shouldn't conceive. I think it's important to remember, though, there are, according to my numbers, 200,000 plus babies out there, humans out there that were conceived through IVF. That's somebody you might know that would not exist without it. And I know that for me, and I'm a very left brain, I'm part of the research team, like you said, I'm a very logical, I love numbers. It is hard to imagine a world where they just say, oh, that friend of yours never happened because the law, the cost, something like that. We're looking at a frontier here. One of the things that I wanted to make sure that I got clear is 99% of the time when we talk on a libertarian podcast, we're talking about the government has infected something and you got to pull it out. Right now, we're going to try to keep the government away from something. I was looking online and there's a study out of the University of Arizona that is calling for more regulation on this already. So what's a libertarian to do? What do we do with these costs? How do we help combat the costs? How do we help combat the government? Where do we go from here?
Like you said, a lot of it is trying to focus on keeping the government from adding additional encumbrance. And that requires looking at the arguments of why people do want there to be additional regulation and finding ways to explain why the solutions are often more damaging than the problems that they're trying to solve.
Yep.
So, you know, in the case of IVF, it's a lot of, there's a lot of concerns about, you know, potential harms. Like you'd said, there are 200,000 children who wouldn't exist without it. There could also be some ethical questions around whether or not that's good for the overall genetic mixture of the human race. You know, if you have people who are not able to naturally pass on their genes, are those genes that the population is better for still having?
Oh, my. Yeah, when we're comparing genetics, too, and this is out of Reason magazine, I mean, we're to the point with IVF, we've advanced enough now to say this one's probably going to have blue eyes. This one might be a little bit healthier. This one's legs might work a little better. There's a huge moral burden when you say, I want these three eggs of the eight successful, whatever eggs, however many eggs got fertilized, I want these three, four, five eggs to go into me and the rest of these to not. Is this some kind of Brave New World scary situation? Or is this one of those additional choice? That's great. And these lives weren't going to be around without it regardless. So either way, we're creating life and not taking life away. Yeah, where do you stand on that?
Well, you know, there is a free market solution I also want to touch on to kind of that has been a step into this kind of moral gray area of what do you do with these extra frozen embryos, which is embryo adoption or donation. Again, it's something where you can't legally sell the embryos off, but some parents choose to, rather than destroying the embryos, they can give them to another couple who can then adopt the embryos, have them implanted and birth that child out. And it's legally, it's a much easier adoption because on paper, legally, whoever births a child is a parent to a child. Genetics do not matter. So the costs associated are also much lower than going through IVF and having your own eggs used, for example. You can go through an anonymous donor program for between $6,000 and $10,000 to try to implant one donor embryo, compared to $10,000 to $12,000 to try to go through one round of IVF. For some couples, particularly, there's a lot of enthusiasm about this among kind of the religious right, the Christian conservatives, who really strongly take that idea that life begins at conception very seriously, and because of that, choose to try to give the term that is often used is snowflake babies.
Okay.
there's a lot of emotion that can be built up around that idea of these are children that they're frozen in, you know, cryogenic stasis and waiting for families to take them, otherwise they're going to die.
So you're telling me Christian conservatives can have snowflake babies?
Yes.
There's some contradiction in there from what I wrote just about.
There's snowflake adoption agencies.
Sure. That's funny that the Christian conservatives have elected for that name, but that's funny. You know, it's funny that you're talking about this because it seems like while we discuss these issues where we have heartfelt feelings, suddenly the free market, what you're telling me is finding a way to make it so that those people who are worried about conception can have their way and that the people who want that choice, who want that option, can have their way as well. Mm-hmm. And it's becoming cheaper. So instead of saying it's either these guys or those guys, the free market is finding a way to say maybe can be both.
Yes, but then there's still an issue where there is some government regulation that stands in the way of this market perhaps even providing a better solution. So we've talked a couple times that you can't legally purchase any of these parts, any embryos or gametes. And because of the cost that goes into producing the embryos, that kind of creates a bit of an incentive clash for some people who have extra embryos and don't have any specific ideas of what they want to do with them. Like we talked about, they kind of end up in limbo.
Gotcha.
If the parents in that case had the option of recouping some of the costs of going through creating those embryos by then selling them to families that are interested in purchasing them, mm-hmm. they might be more willing to do so. The market, and I speak from experience on this one because this is actually my husband and I have have searched for trying to find an embryo match, trying to find a couple that will just willingly decide to give us some of their extra embryos. It's a really tight market because it's a matching market.
Sure.
And anybody who's ever tried to date knows how hard matching markets are, because it's not just an issue of I picked you, you have to pick me too.
Yeah, man. So I guess we should start wrapping up here. And I guess just to deliver my final thoughts on this is such an important to get in on right now, no matter where you stand on abortion, right to life. If you are a libertarian, this is just kind of something you need to look into right now and tell your congressperson before they look into this issue and provide more regulation and provide more obstruction on this. It's moving into a direction where people like Sarah can find an embryo, a potential child, you know, and it's moving into a place where the life happens at conception people can have their way, and it's moving into a place where the freedom of choice people can have it their way to do what they want with their bodies, and it's becoming cheaper. I mean, that's really a trifecta of great things that's happening with IVF right now, and it will obviously become a bad thing if we say only one side or the other can have their way. And if the government gets involved, I don't even have to tell you what's going to happen with the cost of the whole thing. So I'll leave you with that. Sarah, if you want to wrap us up.
Yeah, I just, you know, it's a really deep subject that once you get into it, there's rabbit holes everywhere that you can discuss with family members, and it can, you know, really give you a chance to talk about some of these more complex subjects that can really cause some intense arguments. I mean, I don't know if you've ever had somebody bring up abortion at Thanksgiving, but
family.
You know, it's a different angle to kind of come at that conversation and really talk about what are the things that we all mean by these.
Yeah, absolutely. So, if you want to follow me on Facebook, name's Hody Johns, Hodey. I should be the only one of those, but if you need that last name, Johns. Best thing you can do, subscribe to We Are Libertarians. If you're listening to this and you're already a subscriber, good for you. You found the best libertarian podcast out there, bar none, as ranked by ourselves. And so so just please support us. Share this episode if you really enjoyed it. Sarah, how can they find you?
Anyone can look me up on Facebook as well, Sarah Brady Wagner. Also, be sure to check out the Fundamental Freedoms videos that come out every Sunday at 8 p.m. on the We Are Libertarians YouTube channel. And please, if you've enjoyed this episode, if you enjoy listening to the varied perspectives offered by We Are Libertarians, then be sure to check out our Patreon and join the network to help continue the conversations.
All right. Thank you, Sarah. Have a good night, guys.